AM 1290 and 95.7 FM. News Talk Radio WHIO presents the newest Ask the Expert show, Shooting from the Hip. It's an hour of straight talk about firearms. When can you carry? How long do you have to wait to purchase a firearm? What about safety, training, and so much more? Your host for Shooting from the Hip is Jeff Pedro. Jeff is a 24-year veteran police officer and currently assigned City of Kettering Detective. As owner and lead firearms instructor for SIM training, Jeff is here to bring to the microphone the truth about guns. Here's Jeff on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM. News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome, listeners. I want to welcome everybody out there to Shooting from the Hip. Believe it or not, we're in week six of the show that is designed to discuss firearms and firearms-related issues in the Dayton area throughout the Miami Valley. The show is brought to you by Sim Trainer, the Dayton area's first indoor range and firearms training facility. And your hosts for the show today are Jeff Pedro, myself, and Mark Avery. I want to start off the show by just wishing a speedy recovery to my daughter, Amy, who had an emergency appendectomy yesterday, and she's at home recovering. And I know she's listening, and I hope she recovers quickly and gets back on her feet. And, Mark, you got a special wish for all the dads
out there. I do, man. This is Father's Day weekend, and I'm a father, but I've got a father, and he's probably listening online. So I want to give a shout-out to my dad and wish him a happy Father's Day. And all of those of you out there who might have forgotten that this is Father's Day, you still got another day or so to catch up and get something and get in contact with your dad. And, you know, it's funny that the phone company said that Father's Day is one of their lowest numbers of regular placed calls, but the highest number of collect calls. So don't call your dad collect. You pay for the phone call and give your dad a shout and tell him how much you appreciate him, how much you love him, and appreciate what he's done for you all these years.
That's a good job, Mark. Couple things I want to start off the show by mentioning, kind of start off on a good note, is I have real good news for the firearm enthusiasts out there that over the last month or so, as we thought would happen, product availabilities, products are becoming more readily available. And when I say products, I'm talking about guns, accessories, and ammo. Now, I want to qualify that by mentioning just a couple of issues. Over the last 6 months, as an example, I haven't been able to get many of the preferred weapons of choice that people have, or preferred firearms of choice that people have wanted. And in the last 2 to 3 weeks, I've been able to get a substantial number. So things are starting to break. Both guns are available, accessories, and ammo on a more limited basis. But nonetheless, we're starting to see some availability. Now, I want to encourage our listeners out there not to rush out and buy everything up if you don't need it. But if you've got some preferred items you're interested in, I think we can start talking now. And you can visit your local gun shops and come down to Sim Trainer. And I think we can start getting along to purchasing some of those items that you're looking for. Secondly, I want to encourage our listeners also, if they get some of those emails, I don't know what we're going to call them, fatalistic emails or the doldrum emails about
dire warnings.
Yeah, that's right. About things that are happening, going on in the industry, please forward those to radio@sim-trainer.com. Again, that's radio@sim-trainer.com, so that we can look up the veracity or truthfulness of those things and then distribute the information on a subsequent show, as opposed to just mass distributing emails that cause a bunch of frenzy among all of our listeners. And it's very important that we try to qualify the truthfulness of those things before we distribute them, because just that information becomes truth if nobody checks. And we want to at least be given the opportunity to check and give our listeners a more informed overview of some of the issues that are involved.
Plus, if you send out emails to folks and it turns out not to be true, then that's your credibility that's on the line too. And that doesn't do our cause any good. The more accurate information that we can give out, when people hear something from us, if they know that it's true, then they're going to start paying attention more than if they get emails all the time and they just, they check it and they realize that it's just garbage, and so they begin to ignore everything, even the stuff that really is important. So give us a chance to vet the emails that come through. Go ahead and send them to us, radio@sim-trainer.com. We'll get an answer back to you immediately, and then we'll cover the email on the show when we get a chance.
Good idea. Another thing I want to alert our listeners to is there's a big event coming up on July 3rd over in Brookville. the Dayton Chapter Tea Party is hosting their second tea party in Golden Gate Park in Brookville on July 3rd. Festivities begin at 5 p.m., with the formal program beginning at 7 p.m. The program is going to feature a kids area, family area for interaction. There are going to be various information booths distributed through or situated throughout the park.
There'll actually be folks out there starting about noon, won't there?
Yes, yes, but the actual program itself, they're encouraging people to come out and enjoy the entire day, but the program itself begins.
And if you've never been out to that park in Brookville, it's a really nice park. They've got a great place to shelter. They've got picnic shelters, and they've got great facilities, so yeah. Come out and join us.
They promise to have food, music, comedy, dynamic speakers once the program begins, and then they're going to top it off with a spectacular fireworks show that evening. So that'll be a great opportunity for you to share the fireworks with your family. Also, I want to mention to you, if you have any, if you request additional information or need additional information, you can go to info@DaytonTeaParty.com. That's info@DaytonTeaParty.com, and they can give you various information about the events that are upcoming. They're also soliciting donations to help make this another very successful, actually more successful event than the last one we had downtown Dayton a couple months ago. And here's the other thing for our firearms listeners. There are brothers and sisters on this issue. They support the Second Amendment as much as we do. They support little government involvement in a lot of things, and it's a great organization to be a part of, and it's a great event to be a part of. One of the things SimTrainer is doing to help promote this activity is we're offering a couple of first shots programs with the proceeds going directly, the total proceeds going to the Dayton Tea Party. And I just want to alert the listeners to those dates. Monday, July 6th from 9 a.m. to 12 noon is the first session. The second session will be Thursday evening, July 9th, from 6 to 9 p.m., and then finally Saturday, July 11th, from 4 to 7 p.m. If people, that last class is almost full already. We've got quite a few people in that, but we'll open that up to all of our listeners. Again, Monday, July 6th, 9 to 12 noon, Thursday, July 9th, from 6 to 9 p.m., and then Saturday, July 11th, from 4 to 7 p.m. Your $25 donation for that class includes... you will get an hour of classroom presentation on firearm safety and range safety, basic functional operation, and how a gun works. And then you go out on the range under the direct supervision of an instructor, and you'll shoot for about an hour, and then you'll come back in the classroom, and we'll talk a little bit more about how you can enjoy the shooting sports. Mark, you want to talk a little bit more about First Shots?
First Shots is a great program. It is sponsored by the National Shooting Sports Foundation. They started this program a couple of years ago. We started it shortly after they began the program, and we've been running First Shots nearly every month since it began. And sometimes the classes get booked so full that we end up having to have two classes on the same day, which is that's a long day for those of us who are teaching it. But it's so much fun to teach, and it's so much fun for everybody who comes out. People get a real great introduction to what it is to own a firearm, how to handle it safely. And safety is, of course, the first thing that we talk about in all of our programs. But then I also get a chance to go out into the range and handle a firearm and shoot, and it really lights up the faces. We take anybody basically who's big enough to handle the firearm. That usually starts about 10 years old. But if you've got a younger child in your family who is quite mature and maybe a little big for their age and they can hold the firearm securely, we can work with you to figure out whether or not that's a suitable program for them. But from 10 on up, we've had people in their 70s and 80s come to take this class. So it's a great program.
Great opportunity. Please take advantage of it. This is week 6 of our program, as I mentioned at the beginning, and we've been pretty conservative up to this point. And Mark and I have decided we're going to kind of open it up. Beginning the next quarter hour, I want to encourage our callers to call in at 457-1290. And let's have a little bit of hearty debate concerning some of the gun issues that maybe are controversial. I certainly would welcome some of the people who don't look at things the way we do or don't have the same opinion we do about guns to call in. And let's get some of these issues out in the open. And as Tommy mentioned in our first episode, let's get the truth out there. There's a lot of things circulating out there that become truth just because it's repeated time and time again and nobody looks into it. But let's open up the forum. Let's call in with your concerns. We're going to open the lines to anybody that calls in, and let's have some hearty debate. There's a lot of issues out there, whether it's guns in general, concealed carry issues, personal safety and self-defense, accidental deaths attributed to firearms, all the issues that frequently get brought out to the fore and the information never really totally gets verified, we just want to open that up. Mark?
Maybe there's a lot of people that think about assault weapons, and they're something kind of scary gun. And if you're one of those folks and you think assault weapons should be banned from civilian use, and you believe that assault weapons are what was banned during that 10-year period of the Clinton gun ban, give us a call and let's talk about it. There are a whole pile of issues that folks believe about guns, and we'd like to at least address the issues and let the real truth get out. So give us a call at 457-1290. We'll get you on the air, and we're about ready to go. So we'll take a break here shortly. You'll get back. When we get back, we'll take care of some calls. We've already got one on the line, so that's a good thing. And maybe you've been listening to us. Give us a call at 457-1290. This is AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Rachel Parsons, spokesperson for the National Rifle Association, and you're on Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back, listeners, and the phone lines are already lighting up. I want to encourage our listeners to call in at 457-1290. Remember, you're listening to Shooting from the Hip, hosted or brought to you by Sim Trainer. And today we want to talk a little bit about some of those controversial issues that you might be concerned about and didn't have the forum to ask about. And let's start off today by going to Trent in Dayton on a cell phone.
Hi, how you doing? Love your show.
Hey, thanks, Trent.
The question I have is concerning the legality of what caliber you're using. I've read some stuff on the Internet. I think it might be rumor that if you're using a caliber that's more powerful than, say, what the police use, and you're forced to use it to defend yourself, that they can consider it too much deadly force, and you can be prosecuted for that.
You're absolutely right, Trent. That is rumor. Caliber is specific to the weapon that you carry, and as long as the gun that you carry is legal, the ammunition for it is sold commercially, and it's being available commercially legal, you're going to be okay. Whether it's 9mm, 40 caliber, or 45, you're not going to have a problem. In personal defense ammo, as long as it's not in a prohibited class, which are very limited or very few that are, you're going to be okay there. So whatever you read specific to it being more powerful than the police, I can just give you an example. If a police officer in your local municipality carries a 9mm, it would be ridiculous to expect people to have to carry something less than a 9mm or equal only to a 9mm. So there are no restrictions along those lines.
There is one situation that occurred in Arizona where a man defended himself against someone who had a record and was a lunatic and had a vicious dog that attacked him, and he was carrying a 10mm because that's what he carried when he was out wandering around in the rural areas, and he did end up not having an adequate defense, and unfortunately, many of the lawmakers said this is nuts and we need to fix this. And then now Homeland Security Director, then Governor Janet Napolitano, vetoed the bill that would have changed that so that he would not have been gone to jail. And unfortunately, he's still there. That's a serious problem. But that's a gross exception and really a miscarriage of justice. There's certainly nothing in the law or anything really in certainly not Ohio precedent that would indicate that there's any reason why you should carry something less than what you feel appropriate and what you're comfortable with.
Excellent. That's what I'm looking to move up to is 10mm. So I just kind of want to clear up those rumors. Thanks.
Good.
Thanks very much for calling. Rick in Carlisle has a question. Rick, are you there with us? I think Missy just hung him up. Okay. Well, let's go on to Kim in Dayton. Let's go to Kim. Kim, are you on the air with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay. What's your question?
My question is, when I have a permit to carry a concealed weapon, and when I go to places that have the sign that says no weapons on this premises, when I pull up there, it is, I'm assuming that it's okay if I just lock the gun there in the car. I just wanted to make sure.
If the if there's a sign at the parking lot that says no weapons, at the edge of the parking lot that says no weapons on the premises.
Yeah, usually it's on the building.
Right. If it's on the building, then the parking lot is certainly okay. There are still some facilities that have signs on the edge of the parking lot, and technically you're not supposed to carry there. But with a law change that went into effect on September 9th of last year, it's no longer a crime for you to have your gun in the parking lot. If there's anything that they want to do, they would have to sue you personally, and frankly, they're just not going to do that. Most of those signs are placed there because the owners have been told by their insurance companies that if they don't prohibit guns on their premises, they will not insure them. And the store owners, the property owners, really don't want to have those signs up, but they can't afford to be without insurance, and so they go ahead and put them up. Many of the places don't even believe that the guns are a problem or that the sign should be there at all. So if you're going into a property that's marked no firearms, then that is something that if they wanted to do something about it, they would have to sue you. There's not a crime involved with driving onto that property.
Okay, and that includes like banks, because sometimes I decide to stop at a bank, but I have my firearm with me, and of course I leave it in the car in the locked box.
Right. The same applies to banks.
Okay.
Banks are actually not prohibited places automatically, but many of the ones around here are posted, which is unfortunate because those are also the banks that get hit.
Yeah.
You'd think they would connect those dots and say, you know, maybe if we had people in here that were armed, or if the bad guys thought there might be someone in here that's armed, they might go to some other bank.
Right.
But they haven't done that, unfortunately. Too many of the banks have posted those signs. But the parking lots are still fine, and you can lock your firearm in your vehicle. Lock boxes, as you mentioned, is a great idea to do that.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for your call. Hey,
you're
Mark,
welcome.
I want to go ahead and plant the seed for hopefully some lively debate and or discussion and present a little bit of information to our audience relative to the people who are against us or the anti-gun movement. They typically cite the numbers of deaths attributed to guns and then overinflate the statistics. But I just want to offer to the audience some actual data that can be verified through a number of government-provided source documents, particularly the FBI Uniform Crime Reports and the Federal Government Center for Vital Statistics, keeping track on how people die and things of that nature. But each year in this country, anywhere from 12 to 14,000 people are killed via homicide. That's across the country based on a 10-year average. 12 to 14,000 is kind of an average number. Of that 10 to 12,000 or 12 to 14,000, about 9 to 11,000 are attributed to firearms. So the anti-gun people like to say guns are bad, so therefore to reduce that number of crime, we're going to go ahead and get rid of the guns. But I want to just mention that if that argument has any weight at all, which it doesn't, each year in this country about 45,000 people lose their lives in auto accidents, and if the same reasoning applies, then we need to get rid of guns. And I'll carry that argument a little bit further. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration tells us that of that 45,000 people that lose their lives in car accidents, about 17 to 20,000 are alcohol-related. So if that's the case, then we need to get rid of the alcohol also, if their argument would be hold any weight at all. So we're going to go ahead and go to a break here, and I just want the callers to kind of mind that around in their heads and think about those issues. And when we come back, we'll talk about that. You're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
God bless America. This is your blood brother, Ted Nugent, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
I want to welcome our listeners back to Shooting from the Hip, hosted by Sim Trainer. I want to just go over a couple of other things, reiterate that Sim Trainer is going to be hosting a variety of first shots class or a series of first shots classes, proceeds of which will go to the Dayton Tea Party. Those dates, again, as I mentioned earlier in the show, are Monday, July 6th from 9 to 12 noon, Thursday, July 9th from 6 to 9 p.m., and Saturday, July 11th from 4 to 7 p.m. Again, those First Shots classes are designed for people who've had little to no experience with firearms. It's a great opportunity for you to get exposed to the shooting sports and to have a great experience doing so.
A quick note to folks, if you go out to our website and register online, you'll find that those dates aren't in there yet. Don't worry about that. If you want to go to one of those other two dates, you can just put the date in the comment until we get the website updated to add those new dates in, which will be either today or tomorrow sometime.
Speaking of the website, if you have any information or any questions you want to ask us, you can visit our website at www.sim-trainer.com. Again, that's sim-trainer.com. Be sure to get the dash in there. Or you can call us down at the range at 937-293-3914. Before we went to the last break, we talked about some issues that might spur a little bit of controversy and try to get some people's minds going. But we want to continue on. We had a question last week concerning concealed carry. And, Mark, do you want to go ahead and address that?
Yeah, and the last caller called in talking about the no carry signs, the no weapon signs at parking lots and also on the buildings. And there was a question about that we got in the email from David that asked about what is the status of those signs and, you know, what does it really mean? Can, you know, if and particularly if you work in a place like that where you may or may not be able to lock your weapon in a vehicle because they've got signs at the corner of the parking lot. And there really are two different answers to that. One is that the signs on the building do carry the force of law. So if you go inside a building and you're carrying a firearm and the building is posted no weapons, unless you have been granted permission by the owners of that building, you could be charged with criminal trespassing. So it is kind of a big deal, and you want to make sure that you understand and you observe those signs, that you identify where they are and make sure that you notice the signs as you go into a building. The parking lot is a little different question because, as we talked in the last half hour, there is no force of law there. They can only sue you for civil trespass if that's their choice. But in the employer arrangement, if the employer says that a condition of your employment is that you can't have any weapons on the premises, there may be a job termination issue associated with that. And if you carry inside the building, they could not only fire you, but then hold you for the police and charge you with criminal trespass. So that's just one more thing about the concealed carry signs.
And I just don't want any of you listeners to be the test case in that particular matter.
Really,
so
don't.
Make sure that you clarify that information with your employer. Send them an email just to get some kind of clarification in writing, then abide by whatever directive they present to you. Steve, you've been waiting for about 9 minutes. Let's go to Steve in Centerville on a cell phone.
How are you guys?
Hey,
great.
What can we
Thanks
do for you, Steve?
You know, I want to preface this these comments by saying that, you know, I'm absolutely positively not anti-gun anything. But the one question I've always had, you know, I'm a boomer, you know, so that means I'm over 60. Why do people buy, or what do they use assault rifles and automatic weapons for?
Well, that's a great question. And the thing with, you're kind of mixing things, because the assault rifle that is often called an assault weapon by those folks who think that we shouldn't have them, those are not fully automatic. All the ones that were banned from 1994 to 2004, those are not fully automatic. They're not select fire. They just look like the same guns that do have those capacities, like an M16, for example. The AR-15 is a semi-automatic. You pull the trigger, and one round fires, and then it reloads, and you can keep doing that until the magazine is empty. But every time you pull the trigger, it only fires one round. And a true assault rifle is going to have select fire. Now, you can't buy one that was manufactured after 1986 because there's another law that banned civilian possession of those firearms, and that's unfortunate. What that did was take all of the ones that were manufactured before that time, cap the supply, and drive the price through the roof. A gun that would have cost about $300 back in the mid to late 60s now costs anywhere between $15,000 and $25,000 if it works. And if it doesn't work, it's still probably about $12,000 because it can be repaired and it's got a serial number.
Damn.
So the assault rifles, you know, are, why would people have them? Because they're fun. I mean, let's face it, full automatic fire is a lot of fun. If you need to do it well, you need to know what you're doing, you need to be careful, and you need to be disciplined, but it's a lot of fun to go out and shoot full auto.
Well, the other thing I want to mention to you, Steve, and to the rest of the listeners out there, when you look at, let me just give you a couple of different types of weapons to compare. You take a Henry lever action, I'll use the term cowboy type rifle,
right,
45 caliber, or you take a Ruger Mini 14 rifle that just has a normal rifle stock, doesn't have a pistol grip or any of the other features of what they typically refer to as assault rifles, or an M1 Grand, World War II vintage M1 Grand that you might get from any one of your local dealers or through some of the programs that are offered, and then your M4 assault rifle looking type rifle. The only real difference there is it's got a pistol grip, and then some of them, they have different configuration on how the ammunition is fed into the chamber, but for the most part you're looking at the same sort of weapon. What's happened over the years, and I think what caused a lot of the controversy, particularly in the 80s and 90s, was that you had a few people who illegally possessed automatic assault rifles, meaning they pulled the trigger one time and it would just go until they let go of the trigger. And there were a few incidents where that got some negative publicity, and then all of a sudden, all the categories of guns that looked like those guns were bad. And that simply
isn't
the case.
What you've done is you've cleared up some questions. Now I understand. I mean, I have nothing against guns whatsoever. I got a bunch myself, but you know, I'm 62 years old.
Well, that's one of the things we're trying to do here is clear up some of those issues that people have, because
that's a real issue, because you equate that with what we had over there in Nam.
Well, many of the guns that you had in Vietnam were M16s.
Right.
That were full automatic. Well, the civilian versions were the AR-15s that were not full automatic. They're fun to shoot. They have very practical usefulness in the shooting sports and in the hunting sports, and there's really no difference than any of the other hunting rifles that are available on the market compared to those guns.
Yeah.
In fact, it's one of the most popular varmint rifles out there. Plus, it's also used in many competitions. They shoot them in the high-power competition up at Camp Perry every year in the NRA national matches. The AR-15 is one of the most common rifles used for that.
The other comment I want to make, and I just want to make this very clear, as a law enforcement officer, I want to emphasize the fact it's criminals that do bad things with guns, regardless of the type of gun they're using, that's the issue. It's not the gun itself, and we have to stop, as a society, attacking the gun and start punishing the criminal, and that's going to help us go a long way. We're going to go to a break here in just a second. And again, we've got a couple of callers waiting on the line, and I want to encourage our listeners to call back at 457-1290 with any of your issues, any concerns you might have. And we're going to continue this debate because I think it's healthy. You're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and FM 95.7, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Cam Edwards from NRANews.com, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Okay, welcome our listeners back. Boy, the phone lines are lighting up now. Let's go to, Mark, who's that over there with rising violence?
Oh,
Janet,
yeah,
Dayton,
Dan and Dayton.
Concerned about rising violence in the area. Janet, go ahead.
Yes, sir. Some friends of mine are living in some pretty high crime neighborhoods right now where they hear gunshots every night, and they've had some violent shootings in their area. And I question them about their ability to protect themselves in their own home. And they seem to have a belief that they need a City of Dayton gun permit to even have a gun in their own home. I was wondering about the validity of that.
Well, the City of Dayton has an ordinance that they want you to register as a gun owner, but it's not to have a permit in your own home. They can't restrict your ability to have a permit in your own home, per se. And you're along the right course if you're encouraging them to go about that process. They can go ahead and purchase their firearms, and the City of Dayton has that ordinance, which I don't know locally recently if it's been if it's going to court, if anybody's challenged the ordinance. But
technically, it was overridden by statewide preemption in 2007, so they wouldn't be able to enforce it. They may try, and then that may be appealed, but the Ohio law now requires that all firearms legislation, all firearms restrictions are handled only at the state level. So that even though some of these ordinances, there were 88 ordinances that were on the books that were invalidated when that went into effect, not all of them have been repealed by the cities and counties that had those ordinances, but they really are in effect not able to be enforced.
And some of the cities are holding out, I guess, as to the last minute, and they're challenging some of the cases in court, but the state law is clearly on her side. And I'd suggest at the very least she call down and just find out what the official stance is of the city of Dayton at the present time, but the state law supersedes here.
All right, so she would have a legal stance if she did have to defend herself in her own home and the city of Dayton questioned that action.
Absolutely. That's really two issues. The ability to defend herself in her own home, she certainly has the right to do. The secondary issue is a minor issue as to whether or not the city of Dayton is going to pursue any sort of litigation against her or charging her criminally for possessing a firearm without having registered as a gun owner. That's a secondary issue to her right to defend herself.
All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Great. Thanks, Janet. Let's talk to Pete in Centerville. Pete, are you on the air with us? You said you wanted to say something about changing gun laws at rest areas?
No.
Oh.
What I'm referring to is Michigan has a law that they enacted that says you can carry your weapon, if you're a registered conceal and carry, into a restaurant that serves alcohol as long as the primary income of the restaurant is their food business. You're not allowed to drink alcohol, but you can carry it in there, per se, like the Oakwood Club.
Right, and there is a law currently pending in the Ohio legislature called House Bill 203, and that law would allow you in Ohio then to carry into a restaurant any establishment that serves alcohol, and there is currently no restrictions in the wording on the percentage of the revenue generated by sale of alcohol, so that would actually be a better deal than the one in some of the other surrounding states. And when you would go into that facility, as long as you don't consume any alcohol, the way the law is written now, you would be legal to do that.
Yeah, that's the way it is in Michigan, only they have the percentage of food served.
Right, that's correct. But that law is currently pending. And everybody, I strongly recommend that you contact your legislature, your legislators, that you contact your state senator and your state representative, contact the governor's office, and let them know that you support that bill. Let's go on to Scott. You have a question about this. Scott, you're in Beaver Creek. Have a question on stats on crime since the handgun law was passed?
Yeah, I've been a concealed handgun carrier since its first inception in Ohio. And I was wanting to find out, has there been any drop as far as robberies and such as that since the inception?
Well, statewide, that data is currently being tabulated. On an annual basis, it really takes a year or two for the various jurisdictions to get all their statistical data up to date, and that's one of the things we're pursuing at the present time. We're going to focus, first of all, on the Miami Valley, the Dayton area, and the suburban communities and try to get that accurate information over the last year or two in particular, and then we'll maybe expand it all the way back to the last 4 years since the law passed. But that's difficult to get because there's so many variables involved, and that's one of the future goals of this this show. We want to be able to present that information. I think one thing you need to know is that as a law enforcement officer, I can tell you that there have not been any significant incidents whereby legitimate law-abiding concealed carry permit holders have done many things illegal. So that's a very favorable statistic that is in favor of the concealed carry law that passed in Ohio.
Okay, where would you go to get this information once it has been?
Your local police department should be able to give you updated information on statistics on crime over the last year, maybe the last 2 or 3 years. So you can start with your jurisdiction, and then you could go to surrounding jurisdictions, and they're ready. That information is somewhat readily available. It's just how up-to-date it might be.
The best statistics are from the FBI Uniform Crime Report, but those statistics are typically a couple of years out of date because it takes them a while to assimilate all of that data and then make it available. But it is available on the FBI website as well.
And there has been a trend nationwide. Violent crime has been on the decrease nationwide. Now, different cities have...
And concealed carry has been on the increase nationwide.
Yeah, interesting parallel.
Wow.
Thank you for your call, Scott.
All right.
Let's go to Kim in Dayton real quick. She has a question about a felony record.
Okay. My husband has a 20-year-old, it doesn't really matter, but 20 years ago was a bad teenager. I want to know, because he cannot carry, and I know that, but can I?
Absolutely. There's no prohibition. The only issue is going to come up is going to be whether or not a firearm can be accessible to the person that's a felon, and if you live in the same home, I think the argument could be made that it may be able to. And that's something I would recommend you get a hold of an attorney and discuss that issue so that you can get very clear legal advice as to the legitimacy of you possessing a firearm and at the same time protecting him from any subsequent criminal charges, the fact that it's in proximity of him.
He wouldn't be able to touch it, but like if you had a safe that only you had the combination to and it was either on your person or in that safe and he wouldn't have access to it and he'd be willing to, agree to that kind of a restriction, this certainly would be within the realm of possibility. Is that the only charge on his record?
Yeah, he was 19 and it was a robbery conviction.
Okay, well, the other possibility is that you could possibly have that expunged and that would going to court and file an argument for that. So... that would be another possibility.
Yeah.
So, we're right at the top of the hour, so we want to thank everybody for joining us here on Shooting at the Hip.
Yeah, I want to encourage our listeners over the next couple weeks to think about some of those critical issues that you hear about, and make sure you bring them to our attention. And we're gonna try to stir things up a little bit. Again, I want to thank everybody for listening to the show, and encourage you to call starting next week at 457-1290. You've been listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290, 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.